Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you this morning.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing very well, and good. We have a special program today. We have a special guest in the studio. Not a lot of people have been in our studio,
right.
We have to be on our toes. But it is a delight to introduce Luke Rutkowski, and a lot of our viewers will know who that is. He also has a website called We Are Change. He's had that for about 12 years. He's been interested in a little bit about our campaign, so he's an ally and he's a friend. He also knows something about alternative media, which all of us have been suffering some. So we want to talk about that. But Luke is an investigative journalist, and his forte is getting people, sometimes not exactly them walking up and begging to be interviewed, but he'll get someone. He's had a lot of famous, notorious people that he's interviewed with, and he's made some very good videos on, and they would be on We Are Change. But he also has not too long ago made a trip. He does do a lot of worldwide traveling. And but one of the things that caught my attention, and it's been in the media, I know it's been on the websites, the libertarian websites, and that has to do with this little town in Mexico, a poor little town in Mexico that had something happen 12 years ago. And you can't help but think about this, because 12 years ago, the people got frustrated, led by the women, about the chaos and the anarchy. Of course, there was a government, there was a police, and there was a mayor, there were a lot of politicians, but they had anarchy there. And guess what happened? With the enthusiasm of the women, they got together, they threw out the mayor, and they threw out the politicians, and they threw out the police, and guess what? Most of the drug dealers left, and the town has changed. Now, I found that as a fascinating story, and Luke, welcome to our program, because I'd like to have you follow up on that, but I'm glad you're here today.
Well, yeah, it's an incredible and amazing story, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, good. Tell us about how you first heard of that story, and you actually went down there and took these photos and all.
Well, the story of Chiron is an amazing story that there's so many different lessons that you could learn from. Just a few years ago, they were going through a very turbulent time. When I was arriving there, I looked at the State Department. I was looking at the area that I was in. I was checking their report, and they're like, as an American citizen, do not go here. This is like Syria. This is like Afghanistan. You will die. You will get kidnapped. I'm looking at the State Department like, oh man, what am I getting myself into? I went into the town and I saw the complete opposite of that, and I was able to talk to the town elder, one of the librarians that was recording the history of the town, and the history is just fascinating with what they went through with the Aztecs, with the Spaniards resisting them. But current day, a few years ago, they were going through a very turbulent time where they had an illegal logging operation where cartels and organized crime with government was destroying their entire environment to the point where they were threatening the water system in their town. And when they were about to destroy their kind of ancient ancestral tree, the town kind of got together and was like, they're going to destroy our heritage,
wow,
our culture, our people. We need to do something about it. So the women started organizing. They started passing around pieces of paper. And it really escalated to the point where they knew they had to do something, where little kids walked up to them and they're like, why are you guys doing this? And of course, the government, the police were allowing the cartels to do this illegal operation. And they said, well, the organized crime guys responded saying, well, first we're going to take your trees, then your houses, then your women. And that's when the women started to rise up and really organize.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Fascinating that the environmental issue was important. Turns out the government didn't do any good at all at preventing it. Then I got to thinking, you know, who's our biggest polluters? Our military and our government. So it is an interesting story that the environmental issue was there. And Daniel, do you have a question for Luke?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. You discover this, you decided to actually go down there, which is what investigative journalists are supposed to do and very rarely do these days, the mainstream media. But maybe if you can walk us through, here you arrive, American guy with a backpack and a camera. How were you received? What sort of walk us through this?
Well, we went into town, and of course, we hit the security forces, the kind of local volunteers who were keeping making sure that no politician enters the town.
That's the
enemy rule they have. If you're a politician, you can't enter the town, because they got rid of two-party politics because they see the divide and conquer that it caused within their town and the chaos, with people saying, we got to vote for the lesser of two evils. So they were like, we're done with this. We have the same problem in America, where people are like, well, Hillary Clinton and the Democrats are so horrible, we can't vote for them. And then, you know, we have Donald Trump meeting with Henry Kissinger, doing all these moves, but at least he's not that bad, or they're not that bad. They got rid of all of that, and they got rid of government completely and set up a new system, a new kind of way of living that is horizontal instead of top down. Mm-hmm. And the town elder told me, we're going by anarchy principles. So many people, when they think of anarchy, they think of chaos, they think of mayhem, they think of there's no way people could exist without government and police. Well, the town of Tehran just proved that they can, in a way, and the results are fascinating. Their costs of maintenance, whether it's the roads or the lights or fixing the city or cleaning the city, went dramatically down after they got rid of government, as well as crime. There's no more murders, there's no more kidnappings. Before, when government was in place, if you questioned the government in that town, and it's not just a small town, it's 30,000 people, yeah, people would be disappeared, people would be murdered. So anyone even going against their current system that was destroying their environment was just taken out. And there's so many people missing their mothers, their fathers, their brothers and sisters still to this day, who are looking for them, because they were just completely disappeared by the previous power structure that was there. And now they're thriving as a city, and they welcomed us with open arms. They weren't, you know, they were just really nice, genuine people, smiling, being nice to us, and just talking to us about their history, which is absolutely fascinating.
Well, you know, and it's difficult to ever find the perfect society, and obviously this is not going to be, or is, a perfect society. So they probably, as you have told me, they still have some drug problems. People use it, but their approach is a little bit different than ours. I don't think they have prisons filled with teenagers.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get rid of drugs. The whole war on drugs is a total, absolute failure, and people need to understand that. And the way that this town deals with it really is a model example of how other cities and other countries should do it. They do it like the kind of Portuguese model, the kind of Netherlands model that they have there, where instead of just punishing people and throwing them in jail for using a substance, they send them to rehab if they cause any trouble. And if there's anyone doing any graffiti, they send them to do community service. So instead of sending them into the jail system like we do in the United States and making them worse or criminals and messing them psychologically with the prison industrial complex, imprisoning more people in the United States than anywhere else in the world, they take care of them as a community. And I actually asked the town elder, I was like, how do we do this everywhere else? You did this with 30,000 people. And he said the main thing, well, first you got to get rid of conflict, and you have to get rid of disorder within yourself to build as a bigger example for your community and go out from there, which is a beautiful lesson that I think a lot of people need to hear, especially today.
Well, the one advantage I understand that they have, and we have to be realistic, is probably culturally it has helped, because we were kidding that you probably couldn't go into New York City and accomplish the same thing because of the culture thing, but it's also the political thing. I'm optimistic enough in time we can get people to come together, because I've often said that libertarianism brings people together, even if they have disagreements, but they're basically follow the they're Christians and they follow the Catholic Church. That really helps a lot, but I still believe this philosophy is possible, you know, when there is diversity, because, you know, this preaching of diversity and they're going to lecture and force diversity on us. Well, that's exactly the opposite approach of a libertarian approach, is that you bring people together, because nobody's allowed to hurt anybody and everything has to be voluntary. So even when there is, you know, a natural diversity, I think that is the solution for a more difficult thing. But in the meantime, but we already see groups of people coming to the Amish and the Mennonites and the Mormons, and different people come together and help each other. So maybe it'll happen. In Mexico, they were sort of desperate too, weren't they? You know, it was so miserable. So we'll probably get to that stage. Well, if we can just get the government out of the way. And I've often said that if we lost everything, if there's a bankruptcy and everybody's poor, but if we have our liberty, we probably would get back on our feet pretty fast, and that, of course, is what we work for.
Yeah, very fast. And when talking to the town elder, he specifically told me, you know, anarchy is a dirty word that many people see as a horrible thing, but to them it means self-government, it means total freedom, and it means total responsibility. And that's the bigger aspect here that a lot of people need to take away from this, because we need to fix ourselves before we fix all the problems outside of the world. And the solutions are out there. They're out there in so many different ways. And it's fascinating, because we were talking to them and we're like, okay, you got rid of the government, you got rid of the police, you got rid of the cartels, you got rid of the organized crime. They pretty much are very similar things if you really look at how they interact. And we were like, what about the banking systems? What about the control that they have over Mexico and over the world with central banking? And they were like, yeah, that's a problem that we're dealing with. And me and my friends were like, well, what about cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin? And they're like, that's an interesting idea. And we were like, would you take some Bitcoin donations? They're like, well, I can't take donations. I don't want to be bribed. They're very ethical people. They want to make sure everything's done right. He was like, I'll bring it to the community meeting. My friend Rodrigo, who lives in Mochiacan, is going there all the time and communicating with them. And now they have officially announced that they're accepting Bitcoin and cryptocurrency donations in order to rebuild the forest that the cartels and the government were destroying in their region. So it's a huge advantage to understand that a lot of the solutions to a lot of our problems, they're already out there, and it's about us taking self-responsibility, taking care of ourselves, and moving forward in a right path that's not for government, that's not for control, that's not for telling someone how to live their life and their existence.
Dan, do you have another follow-up on it?
Yeah, I was just, you know, we're talking about how obviously this is not something that's going to work in New York City tomorrow. But, you know, anarchism or libertarianism or voluntarism, it's not a utopian philosophy, you know. It's not really a philosophy at all. And so if you think about, well, how would you move toward that? And you have we already have things in place, like things like subsidiarity, where you devolve power down to the more local sources you can. You deprive power at the top. You deprive, you know, the top with power. And, you know, we had a conference, Luke, in D.C. in August, where we had the great trader and philosopher Nassim Nicholas Taleb. And he made a great point that I always will remember, talking about the structure of societies. He said it's very, very possible to have anarchy at the national level and communism at the commune level. You know, he's talking about in favor of subsidiarity. And that really is an interesting thing. And it comes down to, as you said, the mentality. You know, how do you change someone from within? How do you change yourself?
You know, I want to move into the subject of alternatives for media alternatives and how we're going to handle that. But I want to just bring up one current event going on, probably the biggest thing in the last couple of days, because we're being bombed. There's been, it looks like 10 bombed. But some people argue the case that these might be just fake bombs, fake news and fake bombs, but it's stirring up trouble. It's a political thing. Who gets blamed? Oh, it's those Republicans are doing this. And you can just see in the New York has called out the National Guard to curtail this violence by the right wing. But this is something that, you know, I think I said there's about 10 of these. But what's your take on this? How do we sort this out? And even postulate maybe what are the possibilities here? Who actually is responsible for this?
Well, of course, the mainstream media is running with this with complete sensationalized topics. And the information is still not out there. We're waiting to find out who is responsible, what's happening here, what exactly is in these packages, which is very important. And of course, media is jumping the gun and coming to conclusions, saying it was Donald Trumpers. Right-wingers are coming out and saying it was ISIS because there was an ISIS flag there. There's, you know, questions about the stamps not actually being stamped, not actually being marked. There's questions about the bigger ramifications of this, because there is a big political effect, but the bombs are duds, which many people are calling duds and not working. So many people are looking at this in many different aspects. But again, I would just say, wait until we find out all the information instead of just jumping into conclusions. But the information is very clear that it is being used as a political weapon against political opponents on whatever side deals with this issue.
Yeah, Daniel?
I'll just say, it doesn't matter at this point whether they're real bombs, fake bombs. The psychological operation is already taking place. And you know what it reminds me of, gentlemen? Maybe you feel the same way. But we could not, I don't think we could have had the Patriot Act without the anthrax scare. And that was so fundamental, because you had 9/11 and everyone was totally shell-shocked, and then anthrax, and everyone just freaked out. So it just sort of reminds me of that feeling. We don't know what happened, but it has that feeling.
Yeah, anthrax and that came before Dietrich's. Yeah. Of course, many people stopped even questioning or looking into the bigger aspects of that entire story, which there were so many important holes in that official story that needed to be brought up, but yet it's just swept underneath the rug that the psychological operation was successful.
And to most of them, it's irrelevant. They have a political agenda, and that's it. And our job is to sort it out without jumping to the conclusion. But that seems like we're doing this every day.
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about alternative media. And you have some experience in this. You have been victimized by people wanting to curtail your controversial things. Telling the truth. I mean, telling the truth about this city. No wonder they want to keep us out of there. Do they want any Americans to go down to that Mexican city and find out? You know, they take care of themselves. It's not a big deal. So you've been on a list, as our group has been, and many libertarian, conservative, freedom-loving people get put on the list. How do you assess that, and what do you see as some of the alternatives that we can do?
Oh, it's been very difficult because I'm a reporter who loves being there on the ground, and my philosophy is always taking self-responsibility and being better than the mainstream media by doing their job better and replacing them by making them irrelevant. And that's why I go to places like Somalia, Venezuela, Fukushima, in the no-go zones, all over the world to really document what's really happening there. And I've been hit the hardest, as well as other independent media, for simply doing the job that needs to get done. I mean, there's many traps in our society to just put people in jail, in debt, in servitude, in need. And to me, the job of a journalist is to really investigate these things and to liberate people with the free flow of information so they can empower themselves with knowledge. And that's been my basic principle. And that, of course, is a big threat. You also have to understand here, we confront a lot of powerful people, whether it's Henry Kissinger or even Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google, who now runs Alphabet. We confronted Eric Schmidt at Bilderberg, and after that, our Gmail and YouTube accounts definitely weren't the same. We were one of the first channels that were demonetized. You know, before people were getting demonetized, I was looking at my video manager, and I was like, wait, there's no monetization here. There's some monetization here. There's no explanation. There's no one talking to me. And I'm like, what's going on here? And then you find out, you know, different things that are happening to you. It's very sinister things. And it's never done out in the open. It's always done very secretively. Right. It's always done with two steps forward, one step back. It even came to a point where I was doing interviews. I did one in Thailand. I did one in India with other independent journalists. And they told me both, we put in your name into the YouTube description, and the video was automatically demonetized. This happened 2 years ago. And then they were like, we took out the name and then reapplied for monetization, and we were monetized right away. And I'm like, what the hell's happening here? I'm trying to get in contact with YouTube. None of them are answering. YouTube even reached out to a third party that I had a contract with, and they were like, well, you need to cancel his contract. And they did, because YouTube is such a powerful player. And we have to understand, these institutions, these big tech monopolies, they are a big threat against free speech. They're controlling the public access ways that we communicate on. And it only makes sense that, yes, very special interests, whether it's Saudi Arabia, Israel, the U.S. government, the Atlantic Council, Alphabet, Eric Schmidt, who's connected with Hillary Clinton, of course they're going to be trying to protect their interests. And with doing that, anyone who goes against them will get hit. And we've been hit very heavily.
Okay, but do you think we are in this business put enough pressure where they will modify their behavior and be friendlier, or do we have to develop an alternative completely and totally that we can march to and say, we're done with this group. We are going to go to people we can trust.
Alternatives are the key. I don't have any faith in them. I don't have any faith in Mark Zuckerberg. I don't have any faith in Jeff Bezos. I don't have any faith in all the other big tech CEOs because they're doing the bidding of either government or special interests or corporations, and it's really important to move away from that and move towards alternatives where we could actually communicate and have access to the people that want to follow us. And that's why the email list is the most important thing, and that's why I'm changing my whole business structure to where I'm going to be doing exclusive content just on my email list on wearechange.org, because there's no other way. They control your audience. They control who sees it. They control the newsfeed, and the truth and the revolution will never be in your newsfeed.
Daniel.
Yeah, I mean, we worked for a number of years at the Ron Paul Institute building up our Facebook likes. We built it up pretty well, and then they just stopped delivering it to our people. You know, they just don't deliver it. It's like you order a pizza and they don't come.
Yeah,
you know?
It's the same time that our numbers plummeted and other independent media plummeted, it was all coordinated. So even Lee Camp, who's on the complete other spectrum here, yeah. He's kind of a left-winger, but he's also anti-establishment, anti-war, anti-Saudi Arabia, one of the few people who actually has the gall to talk about Saudi Arabia, because we got to understand here, Saudi Arabia invests billions of dollars into the tech industry, and you know, just like your Facebook numbers went down at the same time, same did Lee Camp's, same did ours, and it's like, we're going to control what goes viral and what doesn't, and we have to understand their control is very vast, not just on what people see, but also the information that they have on us, and they gather on us, and that they sell to governments and third parties.
And here's one thing that makes me think a lot of it is a psyop too, because and you correctly point out it's not just libertarians, it's a lot of left, the anti-war left. You know, the latest purge from Facebook was just a head scratcher. The anti-media Free Thought Project, Cop Block, these are all anti-establishment sites. But you know, if you read the Facebook release, they said, well, these are not actually Russian sites, but their behavior is similar to the Russian bots that we got rid of. Very, very suspicious.
And then how the mainstream media picked this up was just rewriting the press release that Facebook put out about this, and they're like, yeah, these are spam accounts, these are bot accounts. And I'm like, I actually reached out to one of the writers for USA Today, and I'm like, did you even do any research for this story, or did you just rewrite the press release? And he's like, what information do you have? And I sent him all the information, and I'm like, there's so many layers to this story, and they're doing it not in one fall swoop, they're doing it in multi layers. They're doing it very strategically so they could get away with this, so they could still have, you know, people on their platforms. But really, again, it's all about self-responsibility. It's all about understanding that these platforms are controlled by special interest. We can't trust them. We have to move away if we want the truth, if you want information that is valuable to us to make us aware of all the traps that society puts on us. We have to move away from that, and we have to move towards alternative. And I think the one of the ways is there's so many different ways out there. There's Real.Tube, there's Steemit, there's Minds, there's BitChute, there's a lot of alternatives that we need to make people aware of. But I think email lists are, you know, the one way where you could actually have access to the people who want your information. And that's what I've been focusing on and changing my entire just work around that specific concept.
Great.
Daniel, finish
well,
up.
Well, I would just say then wearechange.org is the place to go. And as Luke mentions, you know, they're dealing with email lists now. The same thing is true with the Ron Paul Institute. So go to wearechange.org and sign up for their email list. Go to ronpaulinstitute.org and sign up to subscribe to our list so we can reach you directly and bypass the middleman. Dr. Paul?
Very good. And Luke, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. And I'm sure our audience will like this program. But, you know, for a young guy, I think it's pretty amazing that you're so old-fashioned when it comes to journalism. You actually think like journalism used to be. So that's pretty neat. And just keep up your good work. And I hope a lot of people go to your We Are Change website. And I want to thank our viewers today for tuning in today. And please come back soon.